The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in the studio. We have Kevin Reed and we have John Hammock. They work for a company called Key Logic Systems. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing great today. How about yourself?
Great. Kevin is the Vice President for National Security and John is the CEO at Key Logic. And lots of news for Key Logic here recently, all kinds of things with job creation and winning awards and all kinds of things going on. In fact, John's relatively new. We can talk about your background. But Kevin, let's start off with you. Talk about the origin of the company and what this thing is all about.
All right. Yeah. So Key Logic's been a company that's been here for 18 years. And when we started this business 18 years ago, we had a pretty simple formula of focusing on nationally important missions, building a team of experts that we liked working with, smart individuals, and then ultimately delivering great value to our customers. And, oh, yeah, celebrating success along the way. And, you know, come to find out that ends up being a pretty good business model that's not always a given for a lot of folks out there in the world. So we've had a really great track record over the last 18 years. We've had 17 consecutive years of growth. We're focused on cloud services. We're focused on we're a professional services and engineering firm, bringing solutions to our clients. You know, our mantra is we want to help enable our customers to make better decisions. Our tagline is we unlock and empower our customers' organizations. And we do that, as I mentioned, through professional services, through program management, cybersecurity, energy solutions. And, you know, it's worked well for us. The formula I mentioned has proven to be a real attractor and differentiator among our team and our employees. And, you know, it's proven itself through the fact that in 18 years of businesses, you know, something we're really proud of, that we've never had a one-time customer. So every client we've ever worked with has come back for repeat business.
Good. I went to your website this morning, Key Logic, just like it sounds, keylogic.com. There's a blog there and all kinds of interesting information there about program management. But I think before the show, you're talking about a focus on budgeting and budget solutions. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we found that pretty much all clients and government agencies focus, you know, the same similar challenges. They're trying to do more with less. They've got to make sure they're very efficient in what they do. They're focused on the mission, and they're ultimately leveraging the scarce resources they have. So all too often, budgeting is an elusive thing. It's a challenging thing. And those agencies that can do it well can ultimately, you know, achieve their mission in a better, more cost-effective way. So Key Logic, our budget solution, which is called the Budget Formulation System, BFS, has been widely recognized as a leading solution. It's what makes it unique is it's an integrated product that provides for budget formulation, execution, performance management, and links it all in the strategic plan. So, you know, it really makes what, you know, too often is a chaos of spreadsheets that are difficult to manage and extract information from to a much more efficient, intuitive way of managing budgets, and ultimately allows the agencies more time to actually use and interpret and act upon the information than just simply compiling it and submitting the budget. So we've seen it be very, very effective, and we've got, numerous agencies that we're working with on that.
So, John, you sound like the grizzled veteran. We got the new kid in the block here, too, don't we? We got John. Tell us about your background, please.
Sure. I'm recently with Key Logic. I've been there over 6 months now. Before that, 22 years with the FBI. And then before that, 11 years with the Department of Defense with Naval Air Systems Command. As part of the FBI, I was Assistant Director for IT Infrastructure, Applications, and Data Division. And before that, I was the Executive Program Manager for Next Generation Identification Program, about a $2.6 billion program that we delivered on time, on schedule, and on budget, something that's a novel to the federal government, but we achieved it. It's an eight-year program that's been widely successful across the government, both state and local, and well as federal government.
So when earlier we started talking about cybersecurity. That's kind of your strength, is cybersecurity and forensics and biometrics. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think over my career, that's kind of been some of the focus that I've dealt with the upfront security around cybersecurity. Worked a little bit with insider threat and also around security assurance of both software and security assurance.
So, John, Microsoft partner, is that right? What kind of Microsoft partner are you?
Yeah, so we're a gold partner, but also we're integration partner for their Microsoft Azure cloud solution. So, you know, it's been a great relationship. That's we know that the world and specifically the federal government is moving to a cloud first initiative. That, you know, all the future part of IT modernization efforts that agencies need to consider cloud first. So we know that Microsoft Azure is a great solution for that. We also know it's a complex process for agencies to get there. You know, it's not only solving the technical problems, it's solving the business problems to get there and ensuring they're doing it in a secure and cyber, you know, aware manner. So, you know, we've helped navigate the process for our customers effectively, making it FedRAMP compliant and achieving an authority to operate in the cloud environment. So, you know, the cost efficiencies and the benefits are just, you know, it's almost a no-brainer. It's where we're all going to end up. It's just how we get there. And, you know, having a partner like KeyLogic and or, you know, whomever it may be, which, you know, there's frankly not a lot of customer or companies out there that have taken agencies all the way through the process and realize the successful, you know, FedRAMP certification. So, you know, that's something that we've done successfully and seen the positive results for that.
Now, John, there are, 8,000 Microsoft partners here in the Mid-Atlantic area, and there's all kinds of conferences, and I've talked to all kinds of Microsoft partners, but very few of them have endurance, 18 years of success behind them. Some come and go, and some have specialties, and some don't. And this is it's a very difficult world to live in. We had a Microsoft expert on, talked about moving Windows 10 in the Pentagon. I mean, 4,000 machines by the middle of January, that's difficult. So I see a lot of people looking at Microsoft as one solution for cybersecurity. So I see your company moving in that direction. Is that the general direction, cybersecurity and biometrics?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like I said, we focus on the most challenging problems that our country faces. And, you know, cyber is clearly here and present and going to be here for a long time. And, you know, I think we got to be the best partner for our clients. And when we found that the cyber arena is an area that's very important, you see that focus with bringing Kevin on, assistant director of the FBI and a strong background. You know, we like to say if, you know, Kevin's expertise and background, he did extremely well in protecting the FBI infrastructure. And, you know, if that's, you know, that solution was good enough for the FBI, I think, you know, his ability and skills of bringing that same expertise to their agency is well received. So, yes, it's clearly a focus of all of our clients. So, therefore, it's a focus of ours.
So, Kevin, I did some research before the show, and I was reading an interview with a vice admiral of the Navy. Her name is Jan Tighe. And here's a quote. I wrote it down. She says, "Insider threat is never going away." And so what about biometrics and insider threat? Does it kind of go together? Or is this lined up? Or what's your comment on that coming together?
Well, so I have to agree, insider threat will never go away. I mean, there's a long history of folks that we've had to deal with from insider threat, probably namely with FBI's Hansen, and there's been others. There's not only government, but also industry is trying to poise themselves so they're able to handle insider threat. People are not only stealing, you know, state secrets, but also trade secrets are a big risk. And so as a result, people are going to have to do things like multi-factor authentication. Some people are using biometrics, different types of biometrics to do that, as well as other things that they know. But the big issue is, and for a long time, you know, people have been collecting this data, but taking that data, applying some sort of big data analytics against it and really being able to synthesize it down to a point that it's something meaningful is really the challenge that people are having around insider threat, setting the thresholds that they aren't just chasing the tails and they know when alerts are really alerts and what they need to look at is what they really need to look at. Are really some of the challenges that people are having with insider threat, and meanwhile keeping the operations at a level that that are sufficient, because if you're using all your bandwidth just to try to monitor and see what everybody's doing, you really don't have enough cycles to do the business and the CPUs to run the software and applications you need to be successful.
Hey, Kevin, let's take a break. We come back. Let's be a little bit deeper dive here into cybersecurity and biometrics and the good news and the bad news and how to deploy it and all kinds of developments here lately. And cybersecurity is, of course, front page news. We know that's always important to talk about. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in the studio. Kevin Reed, Vice President, National Security, and John Hammack, CEO at Key Logic Systems. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Kevin Reed, Vice President, National Security, and John Hammack, CEO at Key Logic Systems. We're talking about Microsoft and security. We mentioned budgets. We talked about the FBI. Now, Kevin, you spent some time in the FBI. Any interesting stories to talk about as far as biometrics goes and facial identification? We talked about something before the show kind of interesting.
Yeah, so from the biometrics perspective, so I started in 1995 working on the first system that really took paper fingerprint cards and turned them into electronic for a national systems. It was called IAFIS, Integrated Automated Fingerprint Identification System. A lot of good stuff that came out of that back in, it was actually deployed in 99-2000 time frame, where we developed standards with NIST, got a good relationship building with them, doing testing as far as biometrics went. And then we rolled into 2009, where as executive program manager, we had a program called Next Generation Identification, $2.6 billion program, which really brought in multimodal biometrics. It provided also different type of biometrics where we were concentrated with fingerprints before. Now we're looking at face, the introduction of a virus, a better latent fingerprint for solving crime scene cases, the ability for rapid response back to law enforcement officers along the highway with what we called RISC, rapid instant check. So a lot of good things that came out of that. Really took biometrics from a biometric perspective, from an accuracy, really took it to the next generation of where it is. But from a latent perspective of finding those crime scene prints, it was actually kind of revolutionized the increase in accuracy that we find. Finding cold cases, solving cold cases across the country that haven't been solved in decades because the accuracies of these new algorithms that are being used now on a daily basis. Did that working through a lot of different people, a lot of different companies to get that done.
You wrote an article for NextGov a few months back, and you talked about multimodal biometrics. It sounds like a big fancy word. It's just like more than one way to identify someone. We know about multi-factor authentication. So multimodal means fingerprints, voice recognition, iris scans. What exactly does multimodal mean?
So absolutely that. It's kind of it's multiple use of different biometrics in combination. Example of that, and I always talk about the Singapore Customs and Border Patrol, where they had an individual coming across the border back and forth. They were doing facial recognition on him, decided to do a dual check using fingerprint identification, found that, believe it or not, that here's the guy that has been coming back and forth across the border for 2 years that they've been had been starting to watch, was actually not the right person. Pulled him off to what we would call secondary, and actually pulled his face mask off, polyurethane mask that he'd been wearing. He wasn't a terrorist, but he was an art thief that had been taking antiquities back and forth the country for many years. And that's an example where multimodal authentication worked and it was very effective.
Sounds like a Tom Cruise movie more than the FBI. This is a real story, huh?
So yeah, absolutely.
Beat it. Incredible. And so this isn't just the federal government talking about this. This whole concept of multimodal and biometrics, this is a big, big push in the commercial world as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So banking, healthcare are really pushing where we're going. We're finding that the customers are kind of dictating where it's going to go based upon failure rate. A lot of people wanted to use voice, but they're finding that when they're putting it out there, that the voice failure to do authentication on kind of a one-to-one match is starting to fall off. So unless the algorithms get better, which I think they will, and a lot of them are getting better. That's an example of where kind of the commercial industry is kind of dictating where they're going. Do they go voice? Do they go face? Do they go fingerprint? On the mobile side, people are using mobile identification as well as fingerprint, but with a little bit of a different slant to stay ahead of the folks out there that are trying to defeat it by taking a picture of the face and then rotation of the face with also the ear included. That's an example also of multimodal that's really being used on the mobile side to do things such as banking, which is very important in everyday people's life.
So when Apple uses fingerprint identification, does that help the FBI with increased accuracy for fingerprints?
Well, I think it's kind of a little different application, but one of the things that you find when you use the Apple phone is that they make you take the fingerprint over and over and over again, so you do get a full print, where before you only had kind of one spot. Now you have the entire print to identify from. Makes it harder to defeat. That's kind of some of the stuff that the FBI has done for years with accuracy of fingerprints and wanting to take 10 fingerprints on criminals. So they have those nice prints. You know, there are a lot of repeat offenders as far as crime. If there is ever a print lifted from a crime scene, they take a latent print. Now they have a full print to go against. And it's kind of what Apple's trying to do right now when you authenticate yourself into the phone.
Yeah, an interesting story that John shared with me recently was the ISIS videos that we see the terrorists putting out there are often recorded in HD or 4K HD. And the resolution is so great that the intelligence community has been able to take a fingerprint from the video of the bad guys and then actually use that to start to track and identify the bad guys, which is an intersection of two technologies. It's pretty interesting.
So, Kevin, my question is, a very complex problem here, biometrics. So you think Microsoft's going to provide you the tools to be able to help federal agencies with this whole area of cybersecurity?
So they do have some identification solutions that are out there as far as identity management systems. Being able to really identify where the people, what they do, where they should, what their roles are, and help with the identification. And I think that biometrics is something that really can be coupled on top of what they have around their identity management systems that they have. And so I think that is a viable solution going forward for a lot of companies, not only big companies, but also small companies.
What about something like keystroke dynamics? Is that something people are talking about? I mean, not just something you have some kind of a signature event you have as far as keyboarding things in?
Yeah, absolutely. So like there's a lot of behavioral science stuff being looked at, a way people do things, the way when they start their computer in the morning, the first things that they do, patterns that they have as far as where they're working, similar to some of the things that we did with some Visa fraud detection software that we had wrote KeyLogic in the past. It look at behaviors of where people should be, shouldn't be, how they're using their card is some of the things that are kind of coupled into this and around authentication. People always come in the morning. They typically start their computer. They turn their light on, whatever their pattern is. People are typically creatures of habit. And when that's broke, it's usually an indication that you may want to look at the next level.
What about open source systems and Microsoft? How does that fit in with your strategy, John?
You know, I think Microsoft has proven that they've made a real commitment to cybersecurity, the cloud environment, making sure they're doing that in a safe, reliable, and cost-effective way. So, you know, I think there's no doubt that cyber and cloud is in all of our future. I mean, cybersecurity and safeguarding and the cloud, and those two things don't have to be at odds by any means. In a lot of ways, you know, part of the FedRAMP and the FATAR requirements are put a lot of those safeguards and controls, you know, clearly lay them out and what's required. And by going to an approved cloud solution like AWS or Microsoft Azure, takes care of a lot of those security controls on behalf of the agency and makes that transition to the cloud a lot more. So I think there's inherently, you know, the direction we're going is actually strengthening our security. You know, it can introduce some additional problems, but I think it's been well anticipated. And just, you know, specifically to Microsoft, they've made a strong commitment to that area. And I think, you know, they're a class leader in that area.
Kevin, you were on television with my friend Francis Rose a few months back, and talked about a really important topic. I mean, this is, comes up constantly, is how to recruit the next generation of cyber professionals. I mean, that's, if you have 5 hours to answer that one, I don't know how. Lots of money, maybe that doesn't seem to be working. How do you do it?
Well, so that is interesting. You brought up salary, because typically we're finding that these cyber professionals are getting paid somewhere between 9 and 10% higher salaries than typical IT jobs. So there is a little incentive as far as pay around becoming a cyber professional. However, a lot of the typical IT positions that we had before, systems administration, security administration, database administration, those are actually typical IT jobs that have kind of fallen into the cybersecurity realm. There is a between this year and last year, there's over 1 million additional jobs that have come into the market, and by 2009, grown to almost 6 million additional jobs. So that's a significant cost or growth in needing for talent. One of the things we're going to have to do is look at places, because there's other things besides just technology and the normal science of our science degrees, basic science degrees that we're pulling people out of from IT. There's also things around behavioral. You talked about that earlier, how people behave, cultural things. So maybe political science people that need to be brought into this whole cyber realm to know how to look based upon culture and cultural behaviors. So I think that's where they're going to have to draw, is not only within the technical world and technical degrees, but also around the more poli-sci type degrees that are out there, to have people really look into those behavioral type issues.
Let's take a break, back, talk more about KeyLogic and cybersecurity, and maybe touch on biometrics. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in the studio. Kevin Reed, Vice President, National Security, and John Hammack, CEO at KeyLogic Systems. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Kevin Reed, Vice President, National Security, and John Hammack, CEO at KeyLogic Systems. We're talking about cybersecurity and all kinds of identification methods, multi-factor authentication. If you go to Google and type in KeyLogic, you see some news releases come. Big contract you guys got. Who are you working with this big contract, and what are you going to be doing for them?
You bet, yeah. So we recently had the good fortune of being awarded a large contract supporting the Department of Energy National Energy Technology Lab. So it's the part of the fossil energy. We've been a partner with theirs for the last 10 years, and with this contract, it'll extend out another 5 years. So, you know, what that contract's focused on is, you know, something we all hear a great deal about in the news, and even more so, I think, with the new administration coming in, is, you know, energy independence, security of our energy sources. And we know that fossil energy, depending on the administrative perspective, has a different view and value and concern level, but fossil energy has always been our base load in the history of our company. So what this national lab is focused on is ensuring that through research and development, they're able to find technologies and processes and systems to help ensure a reliable, cost-effective, clean fossil energy component to our energy solution and energy policy. And so, yeah, so we're supporting them across the full life cycle of research and development. We are supporting they have over $1 billion in research going out on an annual basis. And their current portfolio represents about $15 billion of R&D projects, which includes co-matching from industry partners, over 1,400 projects. So quite a large spectrum of activities. And, you know, we see the positive results that this lab produces. One great example is the horizontal drilling that has made the natural gas revolution that's emerged through the Marcellus Shale and the Utica Shale, the fracking that has made a lot of this natural gas available. That technology originated at the National Energy Technology Lab.
So, Kevin, with your background in the FBI and you hear about this DOE contract, you got to think about cybersecurity, huh? That could be top of your mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that our national infrastructure, power grid, transportation grid, and other things are something that are always of concern. more so on the power grid. We have heard a lot about the Russians hacking a lot of things. We know that in Ukraine, combination of phishing and taking over some control systems were really how they got in and were able to turn off the power grid. That was things that were actually put into their systems years in advance. And in our case in the U.S., we really haven't seen those type of attacks. However, there still is the risk that there has been part of our systems that have been infiltrated with using supply chain and rolling things into supply chains, with people doing phishing expeditions and finding back doors, or even looking at our control systems that even seem to all be analog within our everything from our refineries to our power systems. But really, we're finding that a lot of these control systems that are supposed to be analog have back doors around Wi-Fi and maintenance and things that they're getting in and actually doing that. So there is a lot of risk there that we have. And that's something that from a power and a power protection and our national security perspective, we need to be on top of and really be assessing to make sure that when there is a time that people want to affect our economy or our safety or attack our infrastructure, that we're ahead of that.
You know, John, I went to an event last month and talked to Dr. Busby over at Commerce, and he uses artificial intelligence to help manage his data center. Wow, that's interesting. But when you talk about your DOE contract and millions of dollars and billions of dollars and juggling this and juggling that, I mean, maybe this is an application for AI as well. Do you think it is?
Oh, no doubt about it. And, you know, AI and predictive analytics, the machine learning, adaptive machine learning, you know, it's really what software has been promising to do for us for a long time, is where the software learns, gets smarter, and as it collects more data, it learns from that and can adjust its course and decision making from that. And, you know, that opens up a whole new world of possibilities and value to, you know, the mission it's supporting. So, you know, absolutely, we've employed that exact type of technology of artificial intelligence and predictive analytics for Visa, the credit card company, and also for the IRS. And, you know, what we did for Visa, we developed a fraud detection system for folks that are using credit cards that might be using them in nefarious ways and, stolen or misuse fraud detection. So we mining a lot of data, we are able to identify these types of behaviors, and also folks that try to work outside the guidelines and work on the fringe, that our software will learn from that and adapt to it and flag those as well. So just real quick on the IRS, pretty interesting. We mined over 6 billion credit card transactions that were the IRS had through a John Doe summons for folks that were, you know, looking for folks that were engaged in an offshore, the offshore initiative, laundering money and bringing it back to the U.S. inappropriately through credit cards. And as a result of that, again, doing a lot of data mining, a lot of AI, we were able to identify over $4 billion in unpaid taxes.
There's a very discreetly phrased, talks about people operating outside the guidelines. We call them crooks, operating outside the guidelines. That sounds very formal. Now, an FBI guy has been using stronger words than that. From an FBI guy perspective, where artificial intelligence, biometrics, everything's changing quickly, IoT. So what do you read to keep up, Kevin? I mean, how will you keep up?
Well, so a lot of that is hard to keep up. One of the things that really and truthfully is there is a lot of engagement that needs to happen between government and industry. A lot of that's done via technical forums, conferences, where people are engaging and sharing ideas and information is really one of the best places to really keep up with what the real needs are, what products are out there, and how the two come together. Example of that is around AI and big data analytics. We've kind of found that data analytics has kind of caught up to where it needs to be, but what hasn't caught up is how to apply that to the need of being able to do things like insider threat, being able to analyze the data as it comes out, apply artificial intelligence along with the cyber to say, hey, listen, you do have a problem here. It's automatically picked up and the reaction is somewhat instantaneous rather than people digging through logs to find out there's been a problem going on for weeks at a time.
When it comes to biometric identification, I think of a thumbprint, typically maybe something with an iris. The problem is this, once my thumbprint gets compromised, I can't change it. my password gets compromised, I can change it. So that's one of the weaknesses of this whole biometric identification. I guess you have to look at it as being supplemental, or maybe as a, what a big fancy word would be, holistic. That means you have to look at the whole picture. You can't just isolate one aspect of it, can you?
No, absolutely. I think that's part of it, that, you know, that's something that you're going to carry forever, right? And, you know, we're actually working with folks, even within ACLU, that said, hey, listen, you might as well consider that your biometrics are already compromised and people know who they are and you've lost your privacy.
Assume they're compromised. Wow.
That's right. But when you put those in combination with a few things that you know, it's hard to replicate all of those things, maybe one, and that's really the kind of the beauty of using multimodal, that you have more than one thing that you really are authenticating on.
When it comes to multimodal, is location a factor here? Was that, could that be used too?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that's back to what you said around behavioral patterns. You know, typically people, you know, travel in the same areas. They have typical patterns of where they're at, where they're located. And those could be used as part of, you know, one piece of the authentication model for allowing people to get access to whatever they need to.
I did an interview with the CTO at RSA, and they have this big annual conference. Is that a conference you would attend, Kevin? Or give me a name of two or three conferences you think are worthwhile for my listeners to attend.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the RSA is always, I mean, that's one of the leading products that are out there. There's always AVSIA conferences that have a wide range of topics. Last one I attended was actual Global Identity Conference that was down in Tampa, where we went through not only biometrics that could be used as far as identity and identity management, but the identity management and how that's being worked is a prime example of things that are going on from technology perspective. There's also all the Gartner symposiums and conferences are always a good source of information that's out there.
Let's take a break. Come back, talk more about cybersecurity, talk about KeyLogic and how they can help our listeners. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in the studio. Kevin Reed, Vice President, National Security, and John Hammack, CEO at KeyLogic Systems. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in the studio. Kevin Reed, Vice President, National Security, and John Hammack, CEO at KeyLogic Systems. If you want more information, you can go to Key, KeyLogic.com. Been around for 18 years. So if they show up at your website, everyone wants to see videos. You have videos at the website too?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the way we consume content nowadays, isn't it? Yeah, so we got some good videos that tells a lot about KeyLogic, what our culture is, how our employees, what we seek out for employees. But, you know, highlights our energy practice, our performance management capabilities, and, you know, give you good insight into who we are and what we do.
Number one search engine is Google. Number two is YouTube, and people are going to go there. But I also go to Twitter. So I went to Twitter this morning, typed in your company name. You guys are putting some money behind STEM and women in technology. I mean, you're showing up to play. I saw some announcements here in the last few months. You've done a lot of work with them, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. We're proud of that we, you know, try to be broad, inclusive, and you know, we've got a lot of great women that work with us and bring you know, up our game. You know, and just they're an integral part of it. And you know, we know in the STEM disciplines that segment of the population hasn't always been represented well, and we're doing our part to try to improve that.
Well, this is the fourth block, and this is the block where I have the crystal ball, and people got to predict exactly what's going to happen in 5 years. I got two different skill sets here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to Kevin first and talk to you, talk about the future of biometrics. Then we'll talk about maybe the future of project management and what your company's done and maybe some of the awards you've won in that area. So, Kevin, so what's going to happen 5 years from now? This is all going to be problem solved, and you can put your feet up and smoke a cigar. Or where's it all heading? Is it going to be combination, two or three different ways to identify yourself?
Yeah, so I think the way things have evolved over the years, and what I see in 5 years is that the way forward is really taking biometrics, being able to integrate them, create better algorithms to do matching so you don't have high reject rates. It'll make openings for different types of biometrics that could be out there in 5 years. The big thing around that's capture devices. How are you going to capture that information? Are there new things? Example of that is non-touchable fingerprint scanners, so people don't have to touch things. that are kind of in other cultures are frowned upon. So there's a lot of things out there that are really going to progress in the next 5 years. That's one of them, is the capture. The other thing is to keep ahead of those people that do wear Mission Impossible masks and developing software that really indicate there is some sort of manipulation of the biometric or misuse of the biometric. Are things that they're already started as far as development. They're being rolled out in the next 5 years. I think they're going to be mainstream. And really and truthfully, biometrics and authentication is really going to be built around driven by the consumer. We're already seeing that with banking and mobile, and that will continue to evolve so they can get to their information quickly, but also reduce the risk of it being exposed or exploited by other people.
You know, earlier you mentioned the story about Singapore. And when I talked to my 25-year-old daughter about privacy and cybersecurity and facial scanning, wow, she's very concerned about what's going on in the future. I think younger people in general aren't as concerned as older folks, but where does privacy fit in? I mean, do I want to go into a Macy's and have them scan my face and know that every October I go there to buy a gift for my wife? I mean, do I want that? And then have me? I mean, there's the big issue here, isn't there?
Absolutely. So I actually had to go to a congressional hearing about privacy and facial recognition and listen to some of the things that are being done in Facebook and really people being able to opt out of that so their biometrics aren't being collected. But one of the things that I think we can take a lesson from some of the European states, such as Germany, that really they solve the privacy problem up front and then develop it on the back end so they don't have the issues that we sometimes do. One of the things I did with when I was over Next Generation Identification was really bring in some of the privacy advocates early. Get through those topics so you really didn't have that impacting the end solution and more accepted by people, that look has been happened and the safeguards of privacy are taken into consideration early on.
John, I can do facial recognition and see your face, and when I look at you, I think, well, geez, 18 years, pretty good. What about the next 18 years of KeyLogic, and what big general trends do you see happening, moving from services to products or cybersecurity, or in general, where do you see the trends in the next 5 years for KeyLogic?
You bet. You know, as we've continued to grow, my time horizon has been extended longer and longer. I'm trying to look more over the horizon and see where we're going to be in, you know, 3 and 5 and 7 years. You know, one thing, that there's one consistent, and that's change. And we know whether that's technology rapidly evolving to, you know, our administrative focus areas. So, you know, but what's true to KeyLogic is we'll remain true to what's made us who we are. And that's being agile, being innovative, adapting to our current world, and always making sure we're relevant and bringing value. So one way we're doing that is we've been a professional services and engineering firm. And as we've grown and evolved, we've developed a product suite, and we call it Key Performance. And there's three components to that. Key Budget, we mentioned, is our budget formulation system. Our Key Detect, that's our fraud and misuse detection capability with a cyber element to it. And then Key Insight, that's our business intelligence data visualization capability. And, you know, what that does, it provides solutions for our clients that, you know, allow them to do more with less. You know, it allows them to have the best practices and the capabilities that we've developed. And, you know, a great example of that is our budget system I mentioned. So that's actually a GOTS, a government off-the-shelf software system that the EPA developed. And so what we're doing is we're talking to over 10 different agencies, currently engaged with 3 agencies to implement it. And what the system does is allow them to make more effective use of their budget and their resources, make better decisions, and ultimately, you know, do more with less. The beauty of it is when they implement the budget formulation system, they don't have to pay for the core system. Since it's a GOTS, it's no cost to them. The only cost to the agencies that are going to implement it will be the cost of configuring it and implementing it for their specific agency. So that's the future, and I think it's a great value proposition. I think it's unique, and I think that reuse element that, you know, allows the government to reuse elements to do, you know, get the value that they've already invested. We're going to see that, and it's clearly demonstrated in the budget formulation system.
So, Kevin, you can do research in biometrics and know a lot of different things. I mean, I did some quick research and learned about, you know, iris scanning and whatnot. So what is no one talking about? I mean, you've been with the big boys. You've heard what's going on in the future. So what's the stuff that no one's talking about because they're too afraid of? Or what's the FBI looking at in addition to multi-factor authentication? Is it height and weight? I mean, what are the new things around the horizon?
Well, I think there's some things that they've looked at in the past that they're going to continue to grow. I think face is something that's going to continue to be a biometric that people are going to look at. They're going to continue to incorporate iris is also one of the things that they're going to look at. Other parts of the eye, the geometry of the face are things that are being looked at. And all of those things are being incorporated into future algorithm. I think voice will progress. It's one of those things that I think as algorithms and computer processing becomes more available, that will be something that becomes more viable. DNA is also something that, you know, as we get closer with rapid DNA, that's one of those things that are going to be out there. Could be used for the healthcare industry and other things that where it could be somewhat of a controlled environment. But those are things that are typically being looked at and will continue to be looked at in the future.
I have a spreadsheet with 140 usernames and passwords on them, and I would like to be a proponent of the never password movement. Have you heard this? This is people's no more passwords. It's too much trouble, too much problems. You think that's ever going to happen?
So I don't think in the near future. I think there'll be things, there'll be some sort of authentication method. It could be no password, but you're going to have to replace it with something as a form of authentication to get in. The old mantra is something you know and something you have has worked. And I think that'll have to be replaced with something else if passwords do go away. Some people take the risk and do things such as pattern swipes on their phones, but you know, some of that can be easily defeated. So it's all about the risk. I will say that one thing that if you find from a security industry that typically hacking strong passwords isn't really how people are getting in. It's typically through social engineering, and that's really how things are typically defeated now and have been for the last 5 years.
Yeah, it's the human factor, and that's the human factor in the future of KeyLogic is hiring good people and delivering the services.
Absolutely.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. We had an interesting conversation. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today was Kevin Reed, Vice President, National Security, and John Hammack, CEO at KeyLogic Systems.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.